Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Telly Savalas.
You never close your eyes anymore. When I kiss your lips.
Close your eyes, woman. Damn.
And there's no tenderness like before. In your fingertips.
You just want some tenderness in those fingertips? Shit, it's Telly Savalas.
You're trying hard, I'm sure. But baby.
He knows.
Baby, I know it.
He knows it. Fanacek. Donna Belisario's next, yeah. S3E3, Fanacek is back, baby. And we're talking about another TV legend today, Mr. Donald P. Belisario, kind of a modern legend. He's a niche. He's got some niche TV shows that lots of people love, so he's worth talking about. Before I dive into him, I thought I'd catch up on some housekeeping items, as they say. First, wanted to follow up after the Super Bowl. I rather enjoyed the Super Bowl. I was of the commercials, and a good buddy of mine from my Second City days was the lead in one of the commercials. He was in the commercial with Natasha Lyonne. I don't even remember the product, but it's him and Natasha Lyonne at a bar. It's my buddy Jason. He's done hundreds of commercials. Very, very talented guy. I knew him back in the Second City days. Very excited for him because I know when you have those high-profile commercials, they pay a bit more. So that's cool. Also wanted to follow up. I was in San Diego this week. And in our last episode, someone had asked me about filming locations that I've been to. Well, I can add a new one because I was in San Diego and we went for a run near the beach, ran a few miles, and we ran past the Top Gun bar from the original Top Gun when Goose is playing the piano, Great Balls of Fire. Well, I can now say I've been there. It's Kansas City Barbecue Place. By the way, it's also like a fan bar. It's a Kansas City Chiefs fan bar. So it's not great because I don't like the Kansas City Chiefs. They must have had a great time at the Super Bowl, though. But yeah, cool location. The piano is still there. You can go in, take photos, and they play it up, man. They know that that's their moneymaker. So I can now say I have been to that bar, and I have touched the piano, and the jukebox is there from at the very end where she plays Righteous Brothers, yeah. Anywho, that is the housekeeping items I wanted to get to. Let's talk about Donald Belisario, huh? Born August 8th, 1935 in Cokeburg, Pennsylvania. He's still alive. His dad owned the local tavern there. He basically grew up in that bar, and he hung out there all the time, listening to all the World War II veterans tell their war stories. And then later, he would become a Marine and serve with Lee Harvey Oswald. So that's kind of fun. They apparently almost got into like a fight over a book that Lee Harvey Oswald was reading. Later Donald Belisario would write a two-part Quantum Leap episode about old Lee Harvey Oswald. So he clearly had an impact on him. And a lot of this would inform Belisario's later work, which we'll talk about here in a second. So he eventually got a bachelor's degree in journalism from Penn State and go into marketing. He was good at it, right? And he moved up through the ranks, which isn't surprising being he's such a, you know, proven to be such a creative guy. He became the creative director of the Bloom Agency in Dallas, Texas, and he eventually rose to the rank of senior vice president before packing his shit and moving to Hollywood to pursue screenwriting. Which sounds romantic, right? Imagine that. You're at your marketing job. One day say, I take this job and shove it. And you move out to Hollywood and pursue screenwriting. It does not end well for some. But it's funny. Maybe it reminded me when I first got to Hollywood. So I was in the Navy when I first moved out to California. And I had like 31 days to drive cross country, which was pretty cool. And my last several days was in Vegas. I'd never been to Vegas before. And I stayed for 5 nights. That's about 2 or 3 nights too long. But anyway, so from there, I drove straight into LA and I wanted to see Hollywood. So I drive in and I get to Hollywood and I get out of the car and I think about a Burger King and I'm looking around. I'm like, this is Hollywood? Like, it's kind of a shithole, really. It was not the big romantic thing that I thought it would be. But of course, then eventually you see the Hollywood sign, you're fucking blown away. You're like, oh my God, it's the Hollywood sign. And the Capitol Records building and all that stuff. But my first glimpse of it, I don't even know where I was because I didn't know the city. I'm guessing I was probably like, gosh, on Hollywood Boulevard or maybe some street parallel to that. But it was just pretty gloomy. It wasn't great. And I was at a Burger King and I was like, is this it? This is why I drove here. But anyway, so Belisario, though, he had a much better experience than me. And he had some great mentors in the business. So he worked under both Glenn Larson and Stephen J. Cannell, both of whom I'm going to be doing episodes on later on in season three. So those guys are legends. They were his mentors. Belisario learned from them and eventually began creating his own shows, which we'll be discovering shortly. One of the recurring themes in his shows, though, are protagonists with military background. So again, he grew up in that bar hearing all these World War II veteran stories, right? He was a military guy himself, even hung out, like I said, with Lee Harvey Oswald. And that would inform a lot of his characters because like Thomas Magnum, Hawk from Airwolf, obviously the shows JAG, NCIS, a lot of military themes for him. And many of them also share Belisario's August 8th birthday, which is they say oftentimes writers see themselves in their protagonists. Well, I think it's probably very, very accurate for this guy because they even share his birthday, which speaks volumes about his ego, maybe? I don't know. Well, he would eventually retire in 2007 after friction with Mark Harmon on the NCIS set, which we'll touch on. He was married a bunch. He had kids a bunch. But let's look at his work. What do you say? So he had 22 writing credits, 19 producing credits, and 11 directing credits. His first writing credit is for an episode of Big Hawaii. I never heard of Big Hawaii, so let's take a gander. It lasted 12 episodes in 1977. I'm pulling it up now. Adventures on the Paradise Ranch, located on the Big Island of Hawaii. So no major stars as leads, but had some fun guest stars. Don Johnson did a stretch. Linda Gray did an episode. So that was his first foray into writing. Next up, he would write a 1977 episode of Kojak. His episode was The Queen of Hearts is Wild from season 5. Now, I want to specifically read that synopsis because Kojak is a cool show, man. Kojak is ordered not to interfere with a federal investigation when he locates a witness to the killing of a police officer in pursuit of the man who murdered a store owner. The killer is caught but will soon be released without her identification. Kojak learns that she is the girlfriend of a mobster who is known for his extreme violence. Kojak's problem? Get her cooperation, jail the mobster, and secure her testimony without jeopardizing the federal case. Kojak was a cool dude, man. That was a cool show. He's a cool character. That show still holds up. He was smart, a flashy dresser. He was kind of a dick, but well-respected. He was kind of cool. Telly Savalas is an interesting guy. So, you know, he was the lead. He played Kojak. A couple things about him. He was Jennifer Aniston's godfather. He lived in a hotel in L.A. I want to say it was the Hilton that... And I think that Hilton's still there. He had like an entire floor or something in the Hilton, which I think is kind of a baller move. I've always thought there was something kind of romantic about those like 70s stars, movie stars, TV stars who lived in hotels. I think it's kind of cool. I don't think I would do it. I think I'd find it depressing, but I think it's kind of neat. He's got great credits. He made some really interesting choices as an actor. I'm still kind of baffled by his character in The Dirty Dozen. If any of you have seen The Dirty Dozen, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen The Dirty Dozen, go see the fucking Dirty Dozen. Jesus. I'm tired of people not seeing good shit, but there's this weird turn in the movie with Telly Savalas' character. And I'm like, I didn't see that coming. It's just very odd. And he physically doesn't seem to embody those kinds of choices. So it's just always interesting to see him do that kind of stuff. You also need to Google his music on YouTube. One time, and I never pulled it off, I was toying with the idea of doing a one-person show back in my Second City days, improv days, sketch comedy days, and I wanted to have a video element to that show where I would feature Telly Savalas singing because he's got these great YouTube videos where he was singing songs. Go check it out. YouTube Telly Savalas singing. But okay, back to Mr. Donald Belisario. Next up, he would write a 1978 episode of the short-lived show Smith, which was created by Glenn A. Larson. Is it called Smith? Let me take a look here. I can't even read my own handwriting. No, damn it. It was not called Smith. It was called Switch, which again, was created by Glenn Larson. And Donald must've learned something because now he starts producing, right? So he's working with Donald or Glenn A. Larson on Switch. And from this moment on, this guy's also a writer and producer because his next credit is writing, producing 7 episodes of Black Sheep Squadron, which was originally titled Baba Black Sheep. So I'm sure you've heard of Baba Black Sheep, not the kid song, TV show. It eventually became Black Sheep Squadron. He wrote, produced 7 episodes of season 2, 1977 and 1978. The show itself, Black Sheep Squadron, ran from 1976 to 1978. It only lasted 36 episodes. I'm going to pull it up to go through the synopsis. Here we go. Again, military stuff. The dramatized World War II adventures of U.S. Major Gregory Pappy Boyington and his U.S. Marine Attack Squadron 214, the Black Sheep Squadron. This was really popular. And again, I've grew up always hearing of Baba Black Sheep. I have not heard of Black Sheep Squadron. Not sure why I changed names. The cast was Robert Conrad, or Bob Conrad. He played Pappy Boyington. Bob Conrad was an actor, singer, stuntman. He was not well-liked, particularly by other stuntmen. A lot of people likened, so if you've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there's that great scene where Brad Pitt's character, the stuntman, you know, Cliff Booth, gets into a fight with Bruce Lee. And some of that, and Tarantino said this himself, some of that was based on the relationship that Robert Conrad often had with stunt people. They just didn't like him. They wanted to kick his ass. And he was actually referenced in the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Al Pacino's character, Marvin Schwarz. I would say it like that. Marvin Schwarz makes a comment about Bob Conrad and his tight pants. He had a lot of cheesy credits. He was the lead in Wild Wild West. Remember that show, which became a really shitty movie with Will Smith. Eventually, drunk driving accident. He got paralyzed in that. He was just not a great human being, but he's probably most famous for being a dick to stuntmen. He would hit them for real. I think he's just one of those guys who really thought he was a tough guy, and he wasn't. So anyway, back to Mr. Belisario. He would continue working with Glenn Larson by writing and producing a bunch of episodes of Glenn Larson's show, Battlestar Galactica. Ever heard of it? Battlestar Galactica, it ran from 1978 to 1979, only 21 episodes, which I found shocking. I because it had such a big cultural impact. I mean, it got rebooted later, which we'll talk about, but I don't know. I would have thought it lasted longer. I learned from that. Let's read the synopsis. What do you say? After the destruction of the 12 colonies of mankind, the last major fighter carrier leads a makeshift fugitive fleet on a desperate search for the legendary planet Earth. When they got there, they realized it was a shithole filled with horrible Burger Kings on Hollywood Boulevard. It had a fun cast. Lauren Green, Richard Hatch, and my favorite, Dirk Benedict, star of the movie about a guy becomes a King Cobra, which I've talked about. Go look that up. But he was also most famous as Face on the A-Team. Great show. It was eventually remade in 2004, lasting 74 episodes. So the student became the teacher there. And that was racist. I shouldn't have done that accent. And the new one actually was really well received. It starred Edward James Olmos. I guess I've never seen it, but I guess it had a real political bend to it. And it kind of it's like a parable for our current political times back then in 2004. I here's what I do know about the new version, though. So I was an actor at this time, a broke-ass actor, and a buddy of mine, I wouldn't even say a buddy, a guy I knew, quite frankly, he wasn't a buddy, he's not a guy I'd ever want to drink a beer with, but he did construction work on the side, and he had a project, a three-man project, overhauling this lady's backyard, like fucking digging holes and shit, and I don't know, running wires through it, all this project, and I have no experience with that, but he asked me if I wanted to do it, because it was like $20 an hour. And I was like, $20 an hour? That's like more money than I'd ever seen before. So I was very excited. And this motherfucker for 3 days would not shut up about Battlestar Galactica. There were times, it's like, it's LA, right? And you know, I drove probably through 90 minutes of traffic to get there. I'm in the heat. It's 95 degrees. I'm digging holes. I don't even know why I was digging holes, but I'm in some ladies' backyard digging holes. And this guy's going on and on about Battlestar Galactica. I honestly thought about burying him in one of those fucking holes. Like, here's a shovel. Whack. Bury him. Get that out of there. Take my $20 an hour. But anyway. But that's Battlestar Galactica. I do want to acknowledge, though, is that it was very well received. The remake, the original one, I don't know. It only lasted 21 episodes, but it had such an impact. I'm kind of surprised it didn't last longer. Anyway, back to Mr. Belisario, because it was about Mr. Belisario. His next writing gig would have him working with fellow legend Stephen J. Cannell. Now, I always thought it was Stephen J. Cannell. It's not. Stephen J. Cannell. And we're going to do an episode on him, amongst a million other things. Man, my man created 21 Jump Street. So I'm going to build a big bronze statue in his honor in my backyard. I'm taking donations for that. I'm going to start a crowdfunding thing. Anyway, he'd write a 1980 episode of a very short-lived show called Stone, which was, I guess, a Stephen Cannell show. Stone ran from 1979 to 1980. It lasted 10 episodes. Not a big hit. Let's read about it. Sergeant Daniel Stone has been moonlighting as a writer, and after he becomes a success with lots of fans, it leads to resentment on the force. Former friend Chief Paulson is among those unhappy. Okay, so it's about a cop who becomes a writer. The lead was Dennis Weaver. He was McCloud from the show McCloud. That was one of those NBC, I don't know if it was a Sunday night or Tuesday night murder mystery, but of the same ilk of McMillan and Wife, Columbo, that sort of thing. McCloud was a fun show. That's Dennis Weaver. Nancy McKean was in this too. I think she played his daughter, don't quote me. I'm pretty sure it was his daughter. It was only her fourth acting credit. Of course, Nancy McKeon was Jo Polnicek on Facts of Life. I had a big crush on her as a kid. I always thought she was the hottest of those four. And I think I was probably wrong. Looking back, it was probably Blair. But at the time, as a kid, I liked Jo Polnicek, Nancy McKeon. Her brother was Philip McKeon, who died recently. He played Tommy on Alice. And I always kind of thought that was a great show. So that made me sad when he died. Anyway, I don't know why I went on that tangent. But that is Stone, lasted 10 episodes. But that's where he would get to know Stephen J. Cannell. 1980 would prove to be a monster year, though, for old Donald Belisario. Because he had a sit-down meeting with an actor, so at a restaurant, Le Cirque. Right? I think it's pronounced Le Cirque, Le Cirque. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Fancy restaurant. Has a sit-down meeting with this actor there. The actor was kind of a failure. He had filmed 5 pilots already. 4 of them did not get picked up. 1 did get picked up, but they replaced him in the pilot, so he didn't even get to do the series. This actor sat down with Donald Belisario, and he recalled an old script that Donald had written and said he'd like to do a show based on that script. The actor was one Mr. Tom Selleck. The role was Thomas Magnum, and the show became Magnum P.I. What? Magnum fucking P.I. and cha-ching, Donald Belisario hits big. That show ruled. Let me break it down for you, right? So Tom Selleck is a former Navy officer, right? He was a Vietnam vet. I think he was a SEAL, but don't quote me. But he's now working as a PI in Hawaii, living in the guest house of this like super rich guy that we never see. His name is Robin Masters. We hear his voice though, is voiced by Orson Welles. So there you go, a little trivia. But we do get to see the caretaker though. That's Higgins. So that's kind of, you know, in a weird de facto way, Magnum's boss is this little guy, Higgins. Magnum hangs out with his fellow Vietnam vets, TC. He's the black helicopter pilot guy who also recently died. And his buddy, Rick, he wears short shorts. He drives a motherfucking Ferrari in Hawaii. I want to be Thomas Magnum. I actually was him once for Halloween a couple years ago. I think it was back in 2021. I think I was Magnum PI. I was so excited. I had short shorts on, Hawaiian shirt. I bought a Detroit Tigers ball cap. And fucking people kept thinking I was Andy Samberg's character from that movie, Palm Springs. Have you seen that movie? So Andy Samberg wrote this movie and starred in it. It's called Palm Springs. I think it was like on Hulu. It was a great movie, actually. It's kind of like a Groundhog Day thing. The guy keeps living the same day over and over. Great movie. But I guess because he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, everyone thought I was him. I was like, you fucking millennials. Like, I'm not going to dress up as an Andy Samberg obscure movie. I'm fucking Magnum. I was pissed. Anyway, I thought I was a great. But also, poor choice, though, in that it was such a cold Halloween. I was wearing short shorts. But the ladies appreciated it. And by the ladies, I mean my wife, maybe? Probably not. I don't know. Here's some cool facts, though, about Magnum P.I. This is actually one of my favorite shows. I love the show. Hawaii Five-O story. So they reference Hawaii Five-O in it a lot. You may not catch it. So here's the backstory. It was actually supposed to take place in San Pedro, California, the show was. However, 1980, Hawaii Five-O goes off the air, and they didn't want to lose that studio. They wanted to keep it a working studio. They're still bringing in money. So they made this show. They basically changed it to where it's located in Hawaii. And they reference McGarrett quite a bit, especially in the early seasons. And if you know, McGarrett is Jack Lord's character in Hawaii Five-O. So they were kind of in the same universe together, which I think is really cool. They killed Magnum off at the end of season 7. So if you go watch the season 7 finale, he gets shot. And then he's trying to find out who killed him. And then it ends with him literally his spirit walking off a cliff, like up into the clouds. Right? Because they thought the show was over, so they're going to end it with Magnum dying. Well, the fucking show then gets renewed after that. So that they had to backtrack, and then he has to go find the person. I don't know. It's a whole thing. But I remember as a kid being like, what the hell did I just watch? Because I'm watching reruns, right? And I know the show keeps going. I'm like, did they just fucking kill Magnum? But that's the backstory there. During the run of the show, he became so popular that they offered him the role of Indiana Jones, Tom Selleck. Steven Spielberg went to him because, you know, he produced Indiana Jones. They offered it to Tom Selleck, and Belisario Productions wouldn't let him do it. That is not cool, man. That really sucks. I mean, think about the career trajectory. Now, again, I don't know if Indiana Jones works quite as well without Harrison Ford, but that could have been Tom Selleck. They did some crossover episodes with Simon and Simon. They also did a crossover episode with Murder, She Wrote. And it's kind of weird, too, because there's a scene where Thomas Magnum makes love to Angela Lansbury's character on the beach. I made that part up, but they should have. I mean, if you're going to do a crossover episode, man, just have him make out with Angela Lansbury. Anyway, no, but they did do a crossover episode. They did a reboot of this show in 2018, and I'm boycotting. The fucking guy doesn't have a mustache. First of all, stop doing reboots. Create your own shit. But if you're going to do it, right? Do it well. And the guy should have a mustache, if nothing else, so I won't watch it. The OG Magnum, though, ran for 158 episodes from 1980 to 1988, and it made Belisario a very wealthy man. It made Tom Selleck a very wealthy man. It drove lots of tourism revenue for Hawaii, so I think it was a moneymaker all around. So Donald Belisario's next credit, although dumb-sounding, was well-received. It was Tales of the Gold Monkey. I'm going to repeat that. Tales of the Gold Monkey. I wish I was making that up. I'm not. It ran from 1982 to 1983. It lasted 22 episodes. I'm going to pull up the synopsis here. Be patient. Be patient. Let's take a look. The adventures of a 1930s Pacific Islands bush pilot and his companions. Now, what's funny about this is it often gets compared to Indiana Jones, which is kind of a slap in the face to Tom Selleck, I bet. It starts Stephen Collins, which is interesting. He's the dad from Seventh Heaven. He's most famous now as a sex offender. Mm-hmm. Some weird underage shit. He's also Andy Bernard's dad. I've mentioned that before. It was nominated for 3 Emmys, though. Sound, art direction, costume design. It actually won for art direction. I made a note to read the first review. I'm reading more of these reviews. I think they're funny. Here's the title. They don't make them like this anymore. Contrary to popular consensus, Tales of the Golden Monkey was not an Indiana Jones knockoff, although the popularity of those movies was probably responsible for Gold Monkey getting its shot on television. No, Gold Monkey was much more in line with many older adventure movies, and creator Donald Belisario insisted it was inspired mostly by the 1939 movie Only Angels Have Wings. Goes on from there, but that is Tales of the Gold Monkey. We should have a watch party to all of us, right? All Fanatec fans, we should get together and do a watch party. Next up, though, for Mr. Belisario, a show that could have only been meant for little boys and maybe young men. That's right. It's Airwolf, a show about a cool guy flying around in a super helicopter. Young Fanacek thought that shit was really cool. It was really neat. And it came on the heels of a cool movie, right? Because it came on the heels of Firefox, right? Which is Clint Eastwood, also a cool guy in a super helicopter. So this was a very short time period where helicopters were the in thing, right? We know the 70s, like big rigs were cool, right? A lot of TV shows and movies about truck drivers. Well, we had like a 3-year window where helicopter pilots, because even Magnum PI had TC, right? All the helicopter stuff. But this was like a super helicopter. Airwolf premiered as a 1984 TV movie before becoming a TV show that ran for 55 episodes from 1984 to 1986. And again, I would have thought longer. There was lunchboxes, man. Like, I knew friends who had lunchboxes, but it only ran 2 years. I'm surprised, but I'll pull it up. I'll read the official synopsis. Let's take a look here. As part of a deal with an intelligence agency to look for his missing brother, a renegade pilot goes on missions with an advanced battle helicopter. Battle helicopter. That is some cool shit. So I've talked about this guy before. It starred Jan Michael Vincent as Stringfellow Hawk. I love that name. Stringfellow Hawk. Like, the hawk part is like military. Stringfellow is like, you know, Master William, you know, like a fucking butler, Stringfellow. But anyway, he was a train wreck in real life, though, Jan Michael Vincent. Really, you know, suffered from alcoholism. He eventually had his leg amputated because he wasn't taking care of himself. He was in a horrible car accident and broke his neck, which led to some paralysis. But then, like, in interviews, he claimed to not remember it. So no one knows if that's him being a dick, if that's him having amnesia, or it's the alcoholism. Like, no one knows, but he'd be in these interviews and they'd ask him about this where he broke his neck, which was widely publicized, and he would claim not to remember it or didn't even know what they were talking about. I don't know, man. He was a young guy with problems, and it really plagued him his whole career, his whole life, really. He retired eventually. He later died in 2019. He had some cool credits, though, including The Mechanic with Charles Bronson. If you ever get a chance, The Mechanic with Charles Bronson is a really cool movie. It's one of those revenge-o-matic films, right? You know, we saw a lot of those in the 70s. Actually, Charles Bronson himself did probably one of the most legendary ones, which was, what was the name of that movie? Hold on a second. Oh yeah, Death Wish. How could I forget that? So it's Death Wish. Anyway, that is Jan Michael Vincent. That was Airwolf. So my man is taking off, right? He's got some hit shows. He's got lunchboxes. What is next for him? Well, Belisario would write and direct a movie. He wrote and directed 1988's Last Rites with Tom Berenger. I'm not going to talk about it, though, because I want to focus on TV. So next up on TV, Quantum Leap. Damn, more money for Belisario. Like, that was a hit show. It ran from 1989 to 1993, 97 episodes, but it still had a long life in syndication after this. Let's pull it up. Quantum Leap. cool premise. During a government experiment into time travel, a scientist finds himself trapped in the past, leaping into the lives of different people, sorting out their problems and changing history in hopes of getting back home to the present, which I don't think he ever did. I wasn't an expert on the show, but I certainly watched it. It was recently rebooted because Belisario went to the Aaron Spelling School of milking every fucking dime out of your intellectual property, right? Which, hey, I don't blame him. But, I mean, hell, everything this guy did, it got remade. But, of course, it stars Scott Bakula, who I love. I'm a big Scott Bakula guy. Dean Stockwell, who recently passed away last year or two, I think. Every episode began with Bakula's character saying, oh, boy. Like, he'd look in the mirror or he'd realize what his circumstances were in whatever body he was in. He would say, oh, boy. When I was at Second City, have I mentioned I was at Second City? I've only said it like 1,000 times. I worked with a guy there who was always trying to work that into his improv scenes. Like, that was his go-to. Like, if he was in a scene where he wanted to make a transition or the scene wasn't going well, or maybe he was with a partner that he didn't like or trust, he would all of a sudden like shake his head, look around and go, oh boy. And it became an inside joke. And it was one of those things, like, I'd always be in the audience giggling when he did it. No one else even knew what the reference was. And of course, most improv audiences know what the fuck's going on anyway. But I just remember, like, I don't know, sometimes I thought he was making that joke for me because I'd be in the audience just laughing to myself. Oh, another Quantum Leap reference. No one ever got it. No one ever got that shit, but it made me laugh. But all the shows can't be winners. So let's look at a couple of failed TV shows. That's my forte. That's what I'm always interested in. The forgotten, what history doesn't remember anymore. Let's revisit it. So there's one called Tequila and Benetti. I don't know if I like that title or fucking hate it. I can't tell, but it is what it is. I think I'm leaning towards liking it. Tequila and Benetti lasted 13 episodes. I made a note like to really check out this synopsis. Something about this synopsis intrigued me. Nick Benetti is a cop from New York who accidentally shot a 12-year-old girl. Well, there it is. Okay. He's a cop from New York who accidentally shot a 12-year-old girl. His department felt that it would be best that he leave New York until all the excitement dies down. So he is sent to California, and as far as he's concerned, it's like being sent to another planet because LA's so weird. Anyway. As far as he's concerned, it's like being sent to another planet. And as far as the locals are concerned, he is an outsider because New Yorkers are so weird. What? I don't understand what you're saying, you weird New Yorker. Okay, I'll stop all the bullshit. He is teamed with a dog named Tequila, who is not exactly Rin Tin Tin, but they try to work as best as they can. So I'm sorry. So is this a comedy or because there's a dead 12-year-old girl on the one hand. The other hand is like, I'm a fish out of water because I'm in California and all the Californians are fish out of water because there's a New Yorker around. And then there's a dog component to this project as well. I don't know. Anyway, it starred. And the title looks like Turner and Hooch. So we have these weird windows of time, right? We talked about the big rig thing in the 70s where, like, you know, driving 18-wheelers is cool. Then we had that two-year window where super helicopters is cool. We also in the 80s had the whole cops working with dogs thing. Canine with James Belushi, Turner and Hooch with Tom Hanks, and then Tequila and Benetti. And I hope that's an era that never comes back. I don't want to see more people teaming up with fucking dogs, especially in law enforcement. Anyway, it starred Jack Scalia as I guess Benetti. Yeah. And he was one of the Joey Buttafuoco's. And if you don't remember that episode, go back to whenever the hell I was talking about the whole thing I had to deal with the Amy Fisher TV movies. Cause one had Drew Barrymore, one had Alyssa Milano. I didn't know which one I wanted to masturbate to more. So I recorded them both. I'm just going to call it like I see it. Anyway, but Jack Scalia was one of the Buttafuoco's. I don't remember which movie. Also, this show starred Mariska Hargitay, who's had a killer career in Law & Order for like the last 45 years, I think. She's Jane Mansfield's daughter. A lot of people don't know that, which I think is kind of interesting. Jane Mansfield, killed in a horrific car accident. I actually know the guy who owns the car. He has a great site called Find a Death. He used to do these things called Dearly Departed Tours. His name's Scott Michael. He was actually a consultant on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I've met him several times. Really cool guy. He owns the car. Her father, Mariska Hargitay's father, was Mickey Hargitay, a professional bodybuilder. And I remember once seeing a movie made about them, about Jane Mansfield and Arnold Schwarzenegger, a very early credit for him as he played Mickey Hargitay in that movie. Who else was in this? Tequila and Benet? Charles Rocket was in this. I've talked about him. He was in that replacement cast of SNL when Lorne Michaels left. And he got fired, I think, for cursing. And then he eventually killed himself in a field. Like, he cut his own throat in a field. But here's an interesting credit. So this show, Tequila and Benetti, also had the wrestler Terry Funk. And I was like, what the fuck? Terry Funk? Terry Funk was one of those wrestlers, old school wrestlers, famous for, like, gross stuff, like cutting himself in the head. He was, like, in those bloody matches. He was never a WWF guy. So when I was a little kid, late 80s, early 90s, I was really into the WWF. Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior, the Hart Foundation, the Rockers, and then Shawn Michaels became a bad guy. He left the Rockers, all that shit. So I started getting these magazines. Well, the magazines would have all wrestling in it. So not just WWF, it'd have all this regional stuff too. And this was back before it was really like WCW. So there's like regional shit. And Terry Funk was always in these magazines. He was just one of those old school, ugly, bloody, not a great body wrestler, and just made me laugh that he was in this because he was like kind of a gruesome dude. But anyway, that's a failed show. Let's look at another failed show. We're going to jump ahead in time to 2002, a show called First Monday. It only lasted 13 episodes. Let's read this synopsis. Each Supreme Court term begins on the first Monday in October. Currently, the court's evenly divided between conservatives and liberals. Moderate Justice Joseph Novelli has just joined them. The show follows their cases and lives. Yes, Supreme Court Justice. That actually sounds like a cool premise. Star Joe Mantegna, James Garner, Charles Durning, Jimmy Mack, James McKeachin. All right, man. I like that guy. So, but this is 2022, so let's go back in time to 1995, when life was simpler. 1995, you turn on the TV, what would you see? You'd see the show that gave me my SAG card. It's called JAG. That's right, because Donald Belisario created JAG. Oh my God, this thing ran from 1995 to 2005. 227 episodes. That is a money-making machine. I will read the synopsis for you. Oh, I didn't even pull it up. Let me pull up JAG. How dare I? Okay, here, let's see. The cases of Harmon Rabb, another horrible name. The cases of Harmon Rabb, former Navy fighter pilot, and his fellow lawyers of the U.S. Navy's Judge Advocate General's Office. So, star David James Elliott, Catherine Bell, Patrick Laborteau, other people were in it too. I didn't really watch it though, I gotta be honest with you. So I didn't really watch JAG. To me, JAG is a show for older people, and God bless it. I think that there's always going to be that market. I think, you know, before JAG, the generation before you had, Murder, She Wrote in the Dick Van Dyke one where he was Matlock, right? Matlock and Murder, She Wrote. I feel like this was a version of that. It was a military version of it, but this was for older people. Young people in 2002 or 2000 or whatever the hell weren't going home to watch JAG. But I did do an episode of JAG as a young actor. That's where I got my SAG card. I guess it's because I had a Navy background and they let me do the episode. I'll tell my little story though. It was kind of cool. So we actually filmed on a parking lot, like an empty parking lot made to look like an aircraft carrier. So they had some backdrops and then they would spray the cement with water. And it's just, I mean, and I remember looking at like, this is not going to play. And sure as shit, you watch the episode, you would think you're on a damn aircraft carrier. It's wild to me. Some notes I had from that, the director, I'm not going to say his name. He was an asshole. He yelled at everyone. I was like, what a dick. Cause I never after that worked with a director like that. He was the only time I ever really worked with a jerky director. There was a guest star on the show that kept forgetting his lines and the director was so frustrated with him. Catherine Bell, got to hang out with her. She was pregnant at the time. Had nothing to do with me though, but she was pregnant. And then David James Elliott. So here's the thing about David James Elliott. He's kind of a throwback, right? To older actors, tall. He's got like 6'5", handsome, square jaw. I couldn't tell if he was in love with himself. And he would ride around a scooter a lot, like just kind of messing around between takes. Eventually he came over to us. So I'm over there. I was at Craft Services because that's, by the way, I learned about Craft Services. It's the best food and it's never ending. So I'm over at Craft Services, probably eating cookies and everything because I've been working like 12 hours. A lot of the extras were over there. So I was hanging out with some of the extras. And David James Elliott strolls over and he starts talking. And I would love to tell you he was a jerk, but he really wasn't. He was actually a pretty cool guy. So if you're a David James Elliott fan, I'm here to tell you he was actually really nice to everyone. I think he's a little bit in love with himself, but you know what? When you're tall and handsome and the star of a TV show for 10 years, go ahead and be in love with yourself, man. Shit. You're winning at life. But he was a good dude. So back to Donald Belisario. He's already got all these hit shows, right? Magnum PI, Airwolf, what the hell else? Quantum Leap, JAG, right? This motherfucker is wealthy. Wealthy. But he's not done yet. No, because NCIS was right around the corner. Naval Criminal Investigative Service. 2003, this show came out. It is still going. I'm going to pull up a synopsis. It stars Mark Harmon. Mark Harmon, of course, had been around forever. I like him. His wife is the lady, Pam Dauber. She was from, Working Mindy, NCIS, here we go. Sorry, got distracted there. The cases of the Naval Criminal Investigative Services Washington, D.C. Major Case Response Team. So again, I mean, Mark Harmon's been carrying the show. Pauly Peretti was in it for a long time. She left. It was weird. She left the show and claimed abuse by Mark Harmon and like had all these horrible things to say. No one backed it up though. And like, you've never also like in a 45, 50 year career ever heard a bad thing about Mark Harmon. So I think she might be full of shit. I love Mark Harmon. I loved him in Summer School. He'd been around forever. But anyway, so she left the shows, but I'm not going to lie. I never really watched this show either. So again, I put in the same thing as JAG. It's an old people show. And you know, what's funny is the irony is that I'm now kind of an old person, but it's too late for me to jump into that one. I'd have to catch up on 20 plus seasons and I'm not going to do it. But I've also never seen NCIS Los Angeles. So NCIS Los Angeles is a spinoff. It's stars LL Cool J and Chris O'Donnell. God, I'm over Chris O'Donnell. Like, if you survived the 90s, you know that they try to shove Chris O'Donnell down our throats and everything. Like, why was that fucking guy Robin and Batman and Robin? Like, what the hell was that about? I don't know. I just feel like there was a period of time after I had the helicopter thing shortly after the dogs and cops thing, there was a Chris O'Donnell window where they were just really trying to make Chris O'Donnell happen. And my wife is so tired of hearing that tirade because she had a big crush on him back in the day. Anyway, so that's NCIS Los Angeles. I've also never seen NCIS New Orleans, another spinoff. That's Scott Bakula. He's back, right? So Scott Bakula, who did Quantum Leap, is now on this show. That show also stars CCH Pounder. I love her. She played Detective Claudette Wims in The Shield. If you have not watched The Shield, go watch The Shield. It's the best seven seasons of cop television in history, in my opinion. Maybe not the best, but it's up there. It's a great show. And she was great in it. But you know who else has never seen NCIS Los Angeles or NCIS New Orleans? Well, Donald Belisario, I presume, because he had nothing to do with those. So there's a big lawsuit. So when he was doing NCIS, he had a lot of creative differences with them. He did not get along with Mark Harmon. He eventually said, fuck it. He walked away and retired. After that, they went ahead and created these other shows, NCIS Los Angeles and NCIS New Orleans. I guess without his permission or whatever, but he sued. It was a big lawsuit. They did settle. I don't know for how much, but I'm guessing Belisario got a lot of money. It was not disclosed. So he, even though shows he didn't create, he took his intellectual property, he got paid out, and he enjoyed his retirement. And that is Donald Belisario in just under 36 minutes. So thank you for listening. I want to say, first of all, thank you to Donald Belisario. Everyone I'm doing this season are people who've just really created thousands and thousands of entertainment hours of entertainment for us. And you know, even though I didn't watch some of these shows, I appreciate them. It created a lot of work for a lot of people, writers, directors, actors, crew members. A lot of people loved watching these shows. It brought a lot of joy to the world. So thank you, Mr. Belisario. I want to thank you, listeners. You guys are awesome. Without you, I would still be doing the podcast, really. But I would probably be more depressed about it. What are you going to do? But if you like the show, as always, do me a favor. Let me know. Email me or leave me a positive review. If you do email me, I suggest you do it at fanacheckpodcast@gmail.com. Ask questions, get free stickers. I had to order more stickers. That's how many stickers I'm giving out. I've got close to 2,000 Facebook friends now, so I'm giving out stickers, everybody. You can hit me up on Twitter at Fanacheck Podcast. You can, what else? I'm on Facebook, Real Fanacheck, so feel free to hit me up there. And you know what I need you to do, though, really? I just need you to stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacheck.